Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Right, the podcast for first-time instructors, experienced instructors, and anyone else interested in the teaching of writing. I'm Daniel Anderson, and we're coming to you from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Today we have a special episode. We're going to have first-time English 105 instructors at Carolina reflect on the experience of this semester. We have Anna Blackburn, Spencer Doss, Devin Gregg, and X. And they're going to be talking about the disciplinary boundaries that we navigate as we teach composition at UNC, about how we can use transfer, and also touching on some aspects of AI. So let's get started. Tell our listeners what they need to know.
So I'm going to start off with kind of a little anecdote. I've been thinking a lot as I'm wrapping up my course, and I'm in my humanities unit right now, doing an assignment on visual rhetoric and having my students create digital art exhibitions. And I've had this experience where I've taught visual rhetoric before, but I'm running into a kind of an issue where my expectations for what my students were going to be willing to do or feeling ready to approach were different than the way that they are like interacting with the topic. And they've all expressed a lot of insecurity with kind of doing this humanities-oriented interpretive work and not having these cut-and-dry answers or models like we had in the business unit or in our natural sciences unit. And I know we talked a little bit about this idea of expectations versus reality, and I wanted to hear what you all were thinking about that.
Yeah, I think that there can sometimes, and I know this is something we've discussed in preparation for the podcast, but thinking about how students' backgrounds and what kind of preparation they're receiving in high school for these kinds of classes, firstly, is very diverse. They come from such different kinds of secondary education backgrounds, which is something that can be difficult in terms of our curriculum planning, not knowing like where their gaps are. But it can also mean that I think often English classes in high school, based on conversations I've had with my students, still tend to be pretty traditional, where they're just reading literary texts and not working as much with visual texts. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced the same thing, Devin, when I've worked with visual rhetoric, where sometimes students take a little while to warm up to it, maybe because it's less of a comfort zone. And it can be easy to assume, at least I often assume, that since we live in a very like visual media heavy culture, that would be second nature for them, right? Like they all have their TikTok. Many of them are content creators. They work with visual media, but making that connection between the kind of thinking you can do about visual rhetoric and traditional quote unquote rhetoric, I think can be a tricky bridge to gap.
Yeah. And I think part of it, I think for me, is the way that this 105 class is structured and having to move between disciplines, because when I've done this before, I've had the opportunity to spend some time like teaching TikTok or teaching billboards or different campaigns that are more visual in nature. So I'm able to touch base with them in reality and meet them where they're at. But I found that it's been a little bit more difficult to do that in this unit because I felt like we're really geared towards this final project. I'm teaching them all how to use websites or create websites for the first time for the most part. So I think it's been a little bit different than anticipated.
I took my class to the Ackland at the beginning of the humanities unit, and the instructor who was there had them just take some time to look at one of the works and then point out what they noticed about it, just like this exercise in close looking, which I thought was really helpful. And it was nice for me to have their expertise because I don't do a lot with visual literacy in my own work. I've been trying to think about other parts of the humanities that I don't necessarily work with, instead of just focusing on literature for the last unit.
No, I find it really, useful that you all are incorporating visual rhetoric into your curriculums, just because I haven't done that, but it's definitely something I need to pay attention to, because I find myself very cut and dry with more like literary, rhetorical, and whatnot. But with expectations versus reality, yeah, we have to meet them where they're at. And I oftentimes think about how I really functioned when I was in their same position, fall 2019, taking 105 at 8 in the morning. Like, I have to put myself back in that perspective. Yeah, it was just an interesting time, for sure.
I wonder if we could connect this to the fact that, at least in my classes, and I suspect in others as well, we have a lot of STEM students who perhaps come in with maybe a little bit more apprehension about the humanities or have strong beliefs about whether they're a humanities person or not. Because often it makes sense. They come to college and they want to decide like what their thing is. And if their thing is STEM, often that means that they're a little bit less comfortable or less receptive to that kind of content, the humanities oriented stuff. So thinking about like how we can address those expectations coming into things that they might perceive the humanities as a little more fanciful or a little bit less practical. I think so many students come into UNC wanting a very practical degree. And I feel like one of the difficult tasks for us is showing them how something that we see is just absolutely essential to our identity and our work is something that can, firstly, doesn't need to be practical, but can be practical, right? I think it's a little, we have a bit more of a challenge trying to demonstrate the importance of the humanities than we do the social sciences or the natural sciences. And if any of you have suggestions or ideas on like how that kind of, how we can accomplish that mission, or at least maybe give them another way to think about the humanities as a unit.
I feel like my kind of approach to that when thinking about designing my course was to take this kind of visual move, because I do think having students, no matter what discipline they're in or where they end up in life, being visually literate is really important for them, no matter the context. So I think I was able to think about what kind of outcome is going to be good for them and serve them long term, instead of just like forcing them to write a
literature paper.
Right. So I think that from a more pedagogical course standpoint, I considered that. But secondary to that, too, I think that giving them a lot of flexibility in what they choose is important when we're working in these humanities units, and letting them select topics is important. I'd be curious to know how each of you have incorporated that.
I've tried to do that in my humanities unit. Their final project was a close reading essay, and instead of just like choosing a short story for us to read, I asked for suggestions, and then we took a poll and I let them choose one. But that still was just focused on literature. So maybe in the future, it could be interesting to maybe give them more options and like different disciplines within the humanities.
What did they choose?
Ended up choosing To Build a Fire by Jack London.
No, I like the fact that the majority of them are STEM-based, just because with this final unit that I'm doing, I'm making them write poems. So it's very out of their comfort zones, which I think they all appreciate for sure. But what I try to do is emphasize the concept of transfer. How are they able to really transfer this play with language throughout their careers here at UNC?
I love that. And I have one student comes to office hours a lot. I don't fully credit myself for this, but it is very exciting for me. She came in as a bio major and now she's a bio English double major. And she loves doing the kind of work we've been doing with analyzing texts and thinking about things from that perspective. And she's told me more than once, I think something like, I need English to help me stay sane, which all up to STEM. STEM is very important, but I do think that what she's saying speaks to the need for balance and the importance of a balance between the different disciplines in the way that these students are pursuing their education. And that, as you said, X, like that transfer, that they aren't just these monolithic categories that can't be bridged like they can be. And I think we can do a lot in our 105 classes to urge them to think that way, that they can look at as a little bit more porous.
What are some ways that you all are thinking about transfer, have incorporated that in your courses?
For me, it's just the choice I give them in assignments. At first, I had them write op-eds. It's very opinionated writing. In the second unit, more literature review of critical theory and whatnot. And then with this third unit being poetics, I would say they build up the more technical skills of navigating the English language. But then I purposely structured it that is disrupted by the very end. And I tell them at the very beginning of each unit that this shouldn't be taken in isolation. Like all of this can be applicable to whatever you choose to study and do at this university.
I think for me, it's been trying to create sort of rhetorical through lines in my units, like finding ways to very, very explicitly reference something that we use or that we talked about that they could use like a something in kind of the rhetorical toolkit that they could use in an assignment in a previous unit and how they could bring it to that unit. Like my first unit was the natural sciences and they did blog posts about a scientific controversy. And so I encouraged them to make use of anecdotes and leaning into kind of taking on a certain kind of authorial persona and that being a good way to grab attention. And then in the social sciences unit, they did a presentation of a social science project they did on campus. And I talked about telling a story, like use the personal pronouns, talk about your own interest in this issue. Feel free to start with an anecdote here, too. In the humanities unit, they're talking about, they're doing an analysis where they're comparing a original and an adaptation. So most of them are doing films or a book to movie and talking about whether the adaptation is effective or not. And there are other ways you can use anecdotes to talk about that. And for many of them, they think, I can't use the I voice in my writing. What are you talking about? Saying, yes, you can. And you can do it in all of these different disciplines. So I think that can be even, that's just one small example, but finding ways to touch back to previous units and make those links, I think is one way that transfer can be accomplished in one's lecturing style.
No, I like what you said, Spencer, regarding like how all of this is very personal for them. They should bring in their own personal voices because if they don't, then like, I don't know, they're pretty much just cogs in the machine at the end of the day. Without their personal authorial voices, then who are they really producing this work for other than themselves?
Yeah, that's something that I've been struggling with this semester, the question of who are they producing the work for, because I don't know. I feel like I didn't have too much intention behind the assignments I chose in the beginning just because we were putting a syllabus together so quickly. I was thinking a lot about skills, which are definitely important, but I don't know. Sometimes the assignments just seem a little bit arbitrary, and I'm thinking about switching to the PIT curriculum for next semester just so students are choosing something that they're really interested in and spending a lot of time on one project that has a wider audience that they do present at the PIT conference. But I think there definitely are ways to bring that in with the original curriculum. So it's great to hear your ideas.
Well, I think if I had to identify one theme that's united my course, it's probably like audience and accessibility and the way that comes in. And I think that's something that really does transfer and that you have to be aware of what your personal voice is and how that is presented and accessible to other people. And I think it's cool to think about how, no matter what curriculum you're using, there's ways to incorporate that.
I wanted to touch back on what X was saying about the importance of kind of reminding them of why, like, having a voice is the whole point. You don't, I think you use something, words like they're just not cogs in a machine. And I know going off script just a little bit, but I wonder if we could tie this into the rise of AI and how maybe these students might have a different perception of writing. If a machine can do it, especially if it's like informational writing, AI can even craft an argument. It's so complex. So how do we, and this is a huge question and one that we can only talk about a little bit in this context, but like, how do we emphasize the importance of being able to craft something individual and unique when AI can do that kind of mechanical work, especially if they don't have a very high opinion? Maybe we could bring in self-esteem if they don't have as much of a high opinion of their own writing, if they think the AI can do it better. What do we do with that? Besides just be their cheerleaders, which I always try to be. I always try to affirm them that you are writers. I'm not teaching you to be writers. You come in here already writers. And we're going to talk about writing in different contexts that you'll face in college, and that means some new skills, but you can also use the skills you already have. Maybe start there, thinking about how we frame writing.
I think I don't know what everyone else's kind of stance on AI is at this table, but I don't ban AI in my classroom, and I think that it can be useful, specifically when we think about the early stages of creation and where you hit these points in your writing process where you're struggling. I just ask my students to be transparent about their uses and talk to me about how they're using it, why they're using it, whether that is an in-person discussion about saying, hey, I'm thinking about this, or letting me know when they submit their assignment. I just ask for that transparency. But I think being clear with your students about what you want them to get out of the assignments can help emphasize the importance of writing for them. And I think I don't emphasize like completion and getting it done. I emphasize the process and like what they are getting out of it. And part of that for me is allowing them the space to reflect. So I think it's shifting the way that we teach and what we value in the classroom, for me at least.
No, yeah, I take a very anti-AI stance in my class just because of my own position as a poet. Mm-hmm. There's a certain sense of humanity that you can take out of the act of writing itself. And I'm also thinking about the environmental impacts of actually using AI. And as I've told my students, they have to be aware of the context that goes into their actual writing processes. So if they choose to use AI behind my back, then they really have to think about that. They have to think about their own intentions.
I think you made a really important point, Devin, about what students are getting out of the writing process. And something that I think one of the main things I've learned this semester is to be more intentional about, I know what my objectives are with my assignments and with each lesson plan or whatever. I think it's really helpful just to say, even if it seems repetitive, explain to the students why you're doing what you're doing.
I think the more I consider my own teaching philosophies and pedagogies, the more I realize, like, in the classroom space, whether I'm an instructor or a student, that it's really important to be transparent about why we're doing things. And that's something I value, no matter what position.
Yeah, I really like how that kind of divests AI of some of its perceived power, too, because that's a very product-oriented. You just type in the prompt, and it generates the text. And I think that could be a way to open up dialogue about how, as humans, we function differently, and that we are reflective. We're not just iterative programs. We produce things more in a state of kind of constant shifting and changing. There's not just a predictable outcome. And I think emphasizing those aspects can really be accomplished through reflective writing, which Devin was mentioning is something that I want to work more into my teaching. I have them do, maybe we could talk about this a little bit, about how we try to work that into our curriculum, because I definitely do have them respond to prompts and do some reflective writing in class, but it's hard to gauge like how much they're getting out of it. And if anyone has strategies they've used, or if we should just trust the process, just having them do that and not overthinking it is actually helping them more, and just being hands-off and letting them do their thing.
I've taught a course before where reflective writing was very structured and required by all students on a schedule. It was built into the syllabus. And I think the seriousness that they approached it with was taken out at that point. So currently, the way that I do it is it's periodic. It's often like spoken or like in the moment. So I did it when I conferenced with my students at mid-semester and asked them like what their writing goals were, if they felt like they have met the kind of things that they wanted to get out of the class. I also usually have structured time in class at the end of each unit to say like, how did this go? What did you get out of this? What worked well? What didn't work well? So I think having these kind of like more organic spaces to do that reflection can be helpful. And I found that my students here and at my previous institution, when given that organic space to reflect, were fairly honest as far as I can tell and approached it willingly.
I agree. After our discussion in this class about peer review a couple of weeks ago, I tried to switch up the peer review process for my class, and then because I did it like more towards the beginning of the assignment instead of them just bringing in a draft and having their peers look over it. But then afterwards, I opened up the room for conversation and asked like how they felt about peer review and which process they liked better. And they were like very honest about it. Like some of them said they hated peer review, but this, if they had to do it, like this way was better at least. But I think that was really helpful for me, just giving them the space, say how they feel. Because at first everyone was like positive, but then I said it's okay to be negative. And I feel like I got more out of that conversation and they got more out of that conversation than just like a written reflection that's required from everyone.
Yeah. Or this is silly, but even today, my students are working on building websites right now. And I think only maybe 5 out of my 19 have done that before. And I've given them options for the way that they can do it, but given them one guided option that I can assist them with. And a lot of the time I'll just do a temperature check in class where I have them give me a thumbs up if they're good, halfway if they're bad, and then a thumbs down. And people like give me halfways and thumbs downs when they're doing bad. So I think sometimes even the like nonverbal, you force them to do this physical reflection can be helpful. And it's a good way to get a quick survey and assess.
I like an idea because it can be like difficult as an instructor to get some of that negative feedback, like even if it is helpful for your pedagogy or whatever. Like, I feel like there aren't a ton of jobs where you open yourself up for negative feedback like that.
And I think it's easy too to say, okay, I see that these students have a thumbs down, I'm gonna check in with them as class. So I think it separates your role as an instructor. It's more so like, where are you at? Not necessarily what is going wrong with the assignment or what have I not done for you. It's this reciprocal thing in my experience.
Something I'll do, another way to gauge or take the temperature, I think is the crazy use, Devin, which I like, is if I have them write a reflection, I'll then have them kind of debrief in their group and I'll listen in a little bit. I feel like there's one group in particular that sits close to where I set up my teaching station, and they're always very honest with each other. Like in a helpful way, not like I haven't really gotten my feelings hurt or anything, but I do appreciate, because if they're like, I'm confused, I don't know what she meant by this, they might not ask me, but as I hear them, and then I can say to the group, I can hear that it sounds like some of you are maybe wanted this clarified. So that way I'm able to check in without just having to facilitate that direct, tell me what's wrong. Because sometimes students have varying levels of comfort with confrontation or with, some people are shy, some people have social anxiety, and there's ways that we can make that a little bit less stressful for them. That too. And that's another way of kind of addressing the diversity we have in our student body, which kind of thinking about from the beginning of our conversation, they're coming from such different backgrounds that we can do what we can to accommodate that in how we implement reflection and checking in with them.
This is a jump, but we talked about reading a little bit when we were thinking of ideas for the podcast, and maybe we could talk about that for a few minutes before we end. I know someone mentioned material from the Toriel Writing Guide, but I'm also interested in how you guys are like bringing in additional readings, or because I think the previous two podcasts have talked some about workshop versus content, and that's something that has been interesting, trying to find a balance between.
I think for me, I spend a lot, like, my class time is pretty divided between workshopping and work, like in-class work time, and sharing information with them. And I think part of that is informed by my experience at my last university, where I was teaching a curriculum that I couldn't change, that was very reading heavy, and no one read. So a lot of the burden of making sure that my students were caught up and could do the assignments was on me to represent information in class that they were supposed to read outside of class. So I think as I designed my course, I use reading as a touchstone. Like, we'll do it once or twice per unit, have these texts that give the basic information they need, or like genre examples, and I supplement it as needed. Like, I'll add it throughout when I notice that we're needing it, but I don't like structure my course entirely around what I assign for them to read, which I think might be a little bit of a different approach than some people do, but I think it's worked for me so far.
Helpful, more as a supplement.
I think going back to where we began thinking about visual text, that, I mean, I know what most of us work with, like literary texts, but I think that can be a really great way to bring them into the classroom, like watching a music video together. One of my favorite pairings to do is I have them read Hawthorne, Young Goodman Brown, which is a pretty quick read. Most of them like it. They read it, and then I show them there's a great music video that actually adapts it. Bread to the Flowers, Can't Deny My Love. He's the lead singer from The Killers, Mr. Brightside. Anyway, it's a really good video. And then I have them talk about the way he adapted the story in his music video and how the lyrics of the song bring out themes from the story and stuff like that. So I think there's ways that you can do textual pairings to maybe take some of the burden off by bringing in like a video or a visual or some kind of text that's easily digestible in class.
that can be another way to sneak in and maybe also bridge some of our research interests. Mm-hmm. Like if there's something we're reading or something we want to do, how can we incorporate that? So pairings can work really well. Comparison is always fun too.
And I really liked your humanities project of comparing two adaptations. Yeah, I feel like that can a lot of times encourage a lot of critical thought.
It's been a rewarding unit. They're having them do, I call them elevator pitches, where they have 3 to 4 minutes to basically pitch their argument to say, this is why this adaptation is wonderful, or this is why it's terrible, and here's why. And it's fun because people, they really have strong opinions. I let them pick anything they want. So they get all kinds of hot takes. Then they have to back up their hot takes with evidence.
So. Yeah, I try to always emphasize the act of embodying the reading or just any kind of text I give them. So even with this final humanities unit, I assigned them some poems to read at the very beginning of it. But I also brought in other modes of what I would call visual poetics, more performance and whatnot. I showed them a video, one of my favorite videos of this ballroom competition, not the fancy big dresses and whatnot, but it's more Vogue-oriented, quite literal performance, and trying to, as we've been talking about throughout this conversation, looking at transfer and analyzing different modes of art for sure.
I think it's a really cool idea that there's ways to pair these readings or arrange reading as something that isn't just this textual practice.
And it's really cool. This has given me a lot to think about in terms of ways to enhance that even more.